These notions were typical of the manufacturing bourgeoisie everywhere, but certainly stated most uncompromisingly and hardest in Britain, where the older feudal traditions had almost completely eroded. Entrepreneurs, while making these sorts of this sort of case, tended to be deaf to the needs of those who were in their employ. Workers used to toiling at their own pace, or nature's pace, had to be broken. A new rational discipline imposed. Factory discipline, it was called. Machines worked at a relentless pace. There was a monotony of the process. You couldn't have a worker deciding, well, I don't think I'll work on this right now. I'll go do something else and then come back. So that although work had been very hard in the fields and in rural life, it could be done more or less at one's own pace, or at least according to a kind of nature's schedule. But not in this. There was a relentless, rational discipline imposed in this factory system, the new factory discipline. If money then were the measure of merit and talent, the new manufacturing classes were certainly making money hand over fist, and so were wallowing in talent. There was a substantial redistribution of wealth underway in late 18th and early 19th century England, and it had created this new class of aggressive, self-confident men. A class that was at war with both the aristocracy and its privileges and the laboring masses who filled the new urban centers the new money had created. These men were successful. Manchester, which became the new symbol of this new radical economic form, no longer had to come to terms with London. London wasn't the center of England anymore as far as these new men of business were concerned. It was rather Manchester. What Manchester thinks today, a famous statement from one of these men went, London will think tomorrow. This became the slogan of this new entrepreneurial middle class, and the intent was clear. The old aristocracy, the old way of doing business was London. This was a new world of Liverpool, Manchester, Sheffield, Leeds, and Lancaster. Needless to say, the impact on this industrial working class was profound. Long working hours, low wages, extremely poor housing, these new industrial cities, hygienic conditions that defied even Dickens' depiction of description. All of these phenomena were to be observed in the early stages of the Industrial Revolution. It's true that conditions varied from industry to industry, from region to region. The standard of living for industrial workers was probably somewhat higher, actually, than for the British farmer in the late 18th century. That is, he was making more money. Conditions were also very harsh in the countryside. One always has the tendency to think about, oh, those halcyon days of back in the pastoral environment on the farm. But those were, in the late 18th century, also particularly difficult. But the farmer or the agricultural laborer may have worked as many hours as the factory hand, but his living conditions may have been as crude. But agricultural workers, farmers, and so on did work outside in fresh air, a commodity that seemed to be in very short supply in Liverpool and Manchester in the late 18th century. Their daily tasks were more varied than in the factory system. There was not the monotony of factory routine. There was not this enforced discipline of the machine that had to be dealt with. And this was absolutely detested by virtually all of these men, women, and children that were thrown into the cauldron of industrial production in the late 18th and early 19th century. Over and over and over and over again, one sees testimony about the extent to which they detested the relentless monotony and of industrial production, industrial discipline, as it was called. It was a new form of economic discipline that was demanded, and it certainly meant less freedom to structure one's own workday. Moreover,